Good morning to Peter Allam with today's Legal Eagle slot. And as mentioned, talking about maintenance court outcomes. And Peter, very good morning. Welcome to the show on this Monday morning.
Good morning. Lovely morning. Lovely weekend we've had. Great weather all weekend for a change. To all our listeners out there, good morning. Very interesting what our dear president spent. Very interesting on the old flag. Great headlines in the newspapers this morning. Today we'll chat again. We'll carry on with our chat about maintenance. So last week we chatted in depth about all the different procedures and the query that I had from one of our ladies who's the father of the child disappeared to London, and she wanted to know whether she could, you know, collect her money there.
Uh-huh.
And following up to that, when I did research, I mean, there were some very interesting, shall I say, reported decisions in point. And these are just short snippets from the judgments. It's not the full judgment.
Uh-huh.
So what we have is, you know, recover losses and that type of thing we're going to have a look at. So the first one that I'm going to mention is that this one here was when a child is born after a doctor has failed to sterilize the child's mother, the doctor's employee should pay maintenance. It's a very interesting one. That was a case, administrator, okay. Natal versus Edward. So there was a judgment granted there against the doctor employees. Africa versus Africa, a 1985 case. We mentioned it last year. That's where recovery is possible when one parent has contributed more than his or her required share to the maintenance of the children.
Okay.
So, yes, there is hope out there for somebody who's been paying more than what he should have paid. He is entitled to a refund. One, though, that you don't see too often.
Right.
So it's a really interesting thing. AM versus RM, it was held that the duty of a husband to support and maintain his wife appeared to be recognized in a Rule 43 application, even where, in the pending divorce action, the legality of the marriage was challenged and held that the pending divorce action brought the situation within the ambit of matrimonial matters and a matrimonial action as in visited by Rule 43. Now, Rule 43 is maintenance, what we call pendita lita, in the interim, you know, up and until the divorce is finalized, or the maintenance court finalizes the amount that there is. And the challenge in that particular case in 2010 was whether or not the parties were married. It was alleged they were married in terms of Islamic laws, like the old customary Bantu laws. The father obviously tried to avoid payment of maintenance, saying, no, this does not fall within the ambit of a marriage. It's outside of a marriage, so you can't use that into the court.
Right.
Anyway, that person came short there and was ordered to pay interim maintenance. What I'm basically getting at with all the matters we're referring to today is people out there with queries to show that I mustn't use the word hope, because there is law that protects people and there are decided cases. Don't be scared to go and see an attorney to try and claim maintenance or do something from a maintenance point of view. Invariably, you do have a case, so it's worthwhile checking. Like the lady who thought because the husband was in London, she could not claim, definitely have a claim. There is an avenue for that. The next one has to do with Anthony versus Cape Town Municipality. That there was the one where there is a duty on children to support parents in a sense of difficulty or dutifulness or piety in circumstances. A minor child may well have to support the parents if he's capable of supporting the parents.
Right, right.
That's
actually very interesting, you know, when it comes to old age parents and people like that.
Yeah. And you know what? You get children that have got inheritance or something like that, or money set aside, or they've had a claim for damages and they've got money invested and they've got somebody looking after them. So, yes, you can go back on your children even if they're minors. That was what it was there.
Okay.
The next one is Archer versus Archer. That's a very, very interesting thing. You know, the husband had married for convenience in that particular matter, no other reason. It's a 1989 case. It goes back. And what happened is that when they were married, the husband was unable to work because of ill health. So it's almost like it was a sympathy marriage, if you can call it that way.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm not sure if she was a carer that fell in love with the gentleman and married him for convenience, or whether she married him to put him onto her medical aid. I don't have the full details. I just have a summary of it.
Uh-huh.
And then in that particular one, the wife supported him morally and financially, and throughout their marriage was supportive of him. Eventually, after becoming wealthy, the man himself, he must have had a claim for insurance or something, he discarded her. As they said in that particular matter, he had used her for the best years of his life when he was down and out.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, the court found that the husband's misconduct had caused the marriage to break down, that the misconduct was gross, and that he would be inequitable to disregard it. So it's a very interesting one. One would have to read the whole one of Archer versus Archer. So be careful. Don't, you know, do things for convenience sake if you're going to get away with it. Another one, yeah, is that, you know, parents support after the child has become a major is one that's very interesting. A major is 18 years these days.
Okay.
So a child must be sorted and kept until they are up on their feet. You can go to court. You can get maintenance for the child if he's over 18 or her over 18. The child itself has a right to call for maintenance, perhaps studying, or something like that, and not able to maintain themselves.
Okay.
So minor children are entitled, they do qualify for maintenance. You know, most of these cases, like B&B, is where the child was a minor studying student and requested the parents to continue to pay for maintenance, you know, and the wife recovered it for the child who was advised. Obviously, the parties have got divorced and maintenance for the major child was maintained.
Right.
The other one, interesting one, is one of Barth versus Milan.
Uh-huh.
It's a 1990 matter. There was a consent paper, in other words, a deed of settlement drawn up, and the child's mother agreed to pay the husband an amount equivalent to a gross monthly salary each month for a period of 20 years, and then, you know, the children would have reached majority in that type of thing.
Right.
So that was a case where they planned an application of a variation, you know, to help. The agreement was not conscionable, what they said. It was unconscionable and incompatible with public interest in that it entirely deprived the mother of any business accruing to her from her professional employment.
Sure.
In other words, she was sufficient enough able to pay this big maintenance, but it was her entire, equivalent to her gross monthly salary.
Mm.
So I'm not sure what the lady did over there, but she obviously had commission or something that she earned, or dividends that she got, or whatever. But, you know, it must be equitable. It must be reasonable maintenance. You know, maintenance is not a case of coming up and you pay something in excess of what you can afford. So that was a very interesting one there.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is Barlow versus Barlow, a 1920 matter, believe it or not.
Sure.
That goes way back. That's regard to the duty of support. It says the quantum does not depend on the desire of the party obligated, but it must be determined in accordance with the requirements of the one to be supported and the ability of the one who must pay. In other words, that there's a scale there that levels it out.
Right.
You know, you can't just say, I want X amount of money. The other party must be able to afford it. The other party must be you know, in accordance with what is required, not excessive stuff.
Okay.
So that's very important there. The other one is Bassetti versus Lowe, a 1981. That is one where there was an extramarital child, and he acknowledged that he was the father of that extramarital child, so he'd been a little bit naughty and made the lady pregnant, and out came a child, and the court found that he was obliged to maintain that child. And it was made an order of court, the agreement between the two of them. So I don't think you can hide. You know, they can do tests. They can ascertain that you are the father, and you will be ordered to pay maintenance. We go to another interesting one. The matter of Boulle, B-O-U-L-L-E versus Boulle. This is one where the gent had a nice little income in the form of capital. Obviously, it was a pension or something like that. And the court found that in order to support his obligations, parents must use their income and, if necessary, their capital as well. So you can get into someone's capital. These days, a lot of people come along and say, I hear it so often here with one of our finance houses here. Oh, the gent cannot touch his pension, because if he does, he will only earn, call it 20 rand instead of 18 rand a month for his pension, and he requires that amount. Tough luck. If you brought children into the world and they need support and maintenance,
you've got
support will go into that. There is no such thing as that is locked in, that can't be touched. So be very, very careful with that. Token maintenance. This was an interesting one. 1983, Brink versus Brink. The plaintiff, a divorcing mother and custodian of a 2.5-year-old child, was awarded token maintenance, although she did not need maintenance at the time. Token maintenance is normally where you pay a rand a month or something like that.
Yeah.
And then what happens with token maintenance, if you need it, you can then go along and increase the 1 rand to, say, 2,000 rand a month or whatever it may be. So your token maintenance, often you see that in the old days it was very popular where, you know, you would maintenance for the wife or the other spouse would be 1 rand per month, which was not payable, but which was a token maintenance. And if the need arose and the person no longer had work, you know, then they could touch on that, come to court and increase the 1 rand to whatever.
To whatever, okay.
So, yeah. So you can also get that still. Don't be scared of getting token maintenance if you're looking in a divorce and you're able to, you know, afford as much as you can, but it's not viable at the time. It can be changed. Another thing is that you can't hide. We talk about investments, their pension funds and things like that. That cannot be hard, hidden. The financial positions of the party should be fully disclosed. Even when the parties are represented, the maintenance officer and the presiding judicial officer, you know, they've got to get information. So if Mr. says, but Mrs. has an investment, or Mrs. has inherited money, in the decision of Butch versus Butch, B-U-C-H, in 1967, as far back as then, it was said that all income and expenditures and investments must be taken into account.
Okay.
So that's very, very important. The other one, Burgess versus Benatar, the custodian parent removes the child from the court's jurisdiction and refuses the other child access to the child, does not mean that the liability to maintain falls away. So you often get that where mothers or fathers poison their children against the other divorce party. They don't see each other. The mere fact that you don't see the child doesn't mean that you're exonerated from maintenance.
From maintenance, yes.
You still have to pay the maintenance. You know, the Percy versus Bursley, an interesting one in 1997. You know, a consent paper that was drawn up that said the child must be maintained until the child was self-supporting. So if the child has reached majority, you know, there is still a situation where the court can come along and say, no, you will continue to pay maintenance. Once again, it relates back to that. The child might be at varsity. The child might not be able to find employment and still living with the mother, which is a cost. So it's very, very important that you can get an order to maintain children once the child has become self-supporting.
Right,
so that's
right.
not the be-all and end-all of it. So, you know, even though the party might not be the custodian of the child, you might have a situation where the child is at varsity, studying, doing a degree, but, you know, place of residence back home when he's not at varsity is with the mom. The mom is still entitled to maintenance if you have agreed on it. Invariably these days, though, they will take the child into account and see where the child is and maybe pay the varsity fees, maybe pay the accommodation for the child there, give him a monthly pocket money and things like that. So don't think majority relieves you from payment, which a lot of people think.
Yeah.
You know, I get daily with the guys, no, my child's amazing now, he must go out and work.
Oh.
Work during the day and study at night. Not as simple as that.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to be very, very careful with something like that. The other one that you have over there is Charles versus Child. Charles, that's 2003. The issue of the division of the divorce assets came into account. You know, it had to do with the one party that moved from South Africa into another country. And there should be no bias, they found in that matter, on the money earner and against the homemaker and the child carer. The plaintiff claimed half of the defendant's assets in terms of the act, and, you know, in light of an award of a large sum of money to earn a substantial maintenance award in respect to the children, no maintenance was awarded to the plaintiff itself. So you can, in other words, utilize assets to set off maintenance.
Okay.
In other words, you know, you say, I'm going to leave the entire household with my ex, and that is in lieu of maintenance, because if we had got a division, we were married in community of property, I would have owned 50% of that.
Right.
So you can set off, in other words, in certain circumstances. But the court will examine that, because you also get a situation where it's not the easiest of things just to turn assets into cash.
Yeah, yeah.
But they will have a look at it, depending on what you've got, and take that into account. The other one is Davis versus Estate Davis. Absolutely, abundantly clear that a father's estate is liable for a child's maintenance. That's a very, very important one. So, you know, often the family says, oh, well, you know, we've got rid of that old bag now and the kids, and there's no more maintenance. You know, the child has died, or our son has died, our brother has died, and, you know, no more maintenance. Not so. That estate can be ordered to pay a lump sum into an account, to pay a monthly amount and that type of thing. So it's clear from the authorities that you are still responsible for maintenance. You're not going to get away with it. De Wit versus De Wit, 1995, definition of a maintenance order in the Maintenance Act, shows that it's wide enough to include an interim order for maintenance. You know, we said that maintenance, what they call pendita lite, in other words, in the meantime, and that can grant an interim court. There's no reason why you can't go before you divorce to the court and claim maintenance as well.
Right.
It's normally done by way of Rule 43 application, but it is there. The maintenance court does have the right to attend to it. You know, it's also such that the High Court can make an order that it's done. In other words, you know, the speedy method of getting money, the High Court can do the Rule 43 application and award it with immediate effect. Those applications are done sort of same day. It's not one where you can file affidavits, wait for answering affidavits, and 6-7 months down the line, you're still waiting for an award. No, it happens immediately with the Rule 43. This was a very interesting one. Ford versus Allen. A son-in-law married in community of property was responsible for the maintenance of his indigent father-in-law.
Sure.
But the liability in its origin would be that of his wife. In other words, the wife was responsible to assist the indigent father-in-law but the parties were married in community of property, so they became liable for that.
Sure.
You couldn't come along and say, no, you can't take it off my salary, I'm not responsible.
But
by the fact that they didn't marry out of community of property.
Right.
The other one is a very interesting one, Fishhook Primary School versus GW. That found that both biological parents of a child are liable for the payment of school fees in terms of the South African Schools Act, unless a parent is exempted, applies for exemption. But other than that, both parents are equally liable for maintenance. You know, even where the child doesn't live with the divorced father or mother, the non-custodian parent, even where they did not enroll the child, even where there is no existing maintenance order for maintenance, the school has the right to take them on and to claim school fees from them. So maintenance is a form of, I mean, school fees is a form of maintenance.
Yes, yes.
And the school itself has a right to take on the parent.
Sure.
Invariably these days, they don't let you sign a child even unless both children sign the entry form. So that's very interesting that the school has a right. Then the next little one that we're going to move on to is another one where a mother's estate can be held liable for child maintenance. We've already touched on that. So the estate does not exonerate maintenance. The one of Govender versus Amartin is one where the maintenance officer had the right to institute a full inquiry in the maintenance court. The maintenance office must decide whether or not to do so. So the maintenance officer has extreme powers and can order you to bring documents, savings accounts, whatever income and expenditure you have. They have a right to go into it fully to ascertain whether or not you are able to, you know, maintain the child and what amount of maintenance is payable. Another one that's very interesting, so many decisions are there to say, oh, but I was ordering the divorce to pay 10 rand per month 15 years ago. You don't still pay 10 rand. As a child grows older, the cost of maintenance of the child increases.
It increases.
That was a decision in Green versus Green and said that it is a factual thing that maintenance increases. And you've got the right to go back to the maintenance board at any stage, whether you wish to reduce it, whether you wish to increase it, whether you wish to challenge it. The maintenance court is always open for applications like that. So that's what you need to be very cautious of. Another thing that's often, well, not often done, but can be done, is that whether one party has funds invested, the court has the right to order that a lump sum of that is paid into an account and then utilized for maintenance thereafter. So don't think that you can hide your money somewhere. They will catch up with you and you will be liable. We go back there to the cost of living. It affects both parents. It affects the minor child. And, you know, if there's good cause shown for a variation, it can be done, like I mentioned. At any time, you have a right to go back to the court and say, look, my ex is now earning double what he used to, and I feel that he can afford more in maintenance.
Therefore,
and if they can show that they require more maintenance, that there is very, very possible. Not a problem to get that. In HSH versus MH, a recent case, 2023, the court stated that it was not possible to interpret and apply Rule 43 unless through the prism of the Constitution.
Okay.
So this was a claim for a contribution towards costs. And they proved over there that the rationale behind the Rule 43 was to ensure that neither party was prejudiced during the divorce proceedings by lack of resources to maintain a reasonable standard of living to pursue their case in the main action. You know, frequently it was found in such cases, one party, normally the wife, will not be in a position to institute or defend a divorce due to lack of financial means. So the High Court discussed the contents of a Rule 47 application and the gender-based inequalities that frequently arise, and in that one ordered payment of a lump sum for cost, to make sure that a fair hearing is got at the end of the day.
Right, right.
We've dealt so many times with estates. Yes, absolutely. Be careful. Don't think that you can determine that no more maintenance will be paid
from that estate.
From that, that can always come back and trigger that.
Right.
And then, of course, we go back to the marriages. You know, there's the Kumbala versus the Master of the High Court. An applicant can establish that she had been validly married at customary law.
Okay.
To a deceased partner, and that falls within the right of maintenance from the surviving spouse. The Surviving Spouses Act allows for maintenance to be paid.
Right.
You do have a claim. You know, there are no little gaps where maintenance falls away and all the rest of it. So you need to be very cautious in that regard.
In other words,
it's a common law duty to support. So these are all basically matters based on that.
And the just in closing, because Peter, we've unfortunately fast and furiously running out of time. But just as a closing comment, it basically what you can glean from what you've said is that the Maintenance Act and the respective laws are pretty much watertight. In other words, you've made a child, you will pay, one way or the other.
That's the exact way of summing it up, Wayne, is that believe you me, you're not going to get away with maintenance. If you have brought a child into this world and you can't hide, you can't skip the country, you can't hide your investments. I mean, so many times you hear of people moving their funds into the mother's name or their mother genuinely into a family member's name, into a girlfriend's name or something like that. Don't get caught because, you know, the maintenance court and the High Court will certainly chase after you and make sure that you pay your responsibilities.
And
but yes, in summing up, like you said, we're running out of time. There are cases, everything can be done, either in the maintenance court or in a court of law. So if you need to follow up on anything, see an attorney and ask him, and I'm pretty sure they'll help you.
They'll help you. And in case somebody wants to contact you, how do they get in touch with Adams?
Yeah, they'll find us at 6 Sansom Road in Berea, the little side street where Pep Stores is. They can also look us up on Facebook. Just add an S to our surname, Adams, A-L-L-A-M-S. Very, very interesting. Up-to-date Facebook page that we have, sort of by Trishana Weekly, and you'll find all our details there. And, of course, you can always phone into the office on 043-7211-018 and make an appointment to chat to one of us at the office. We have a great team here with a number of people available to assist. Make the appointment, pop in and see us, and we'll sort you out.
Peter, thank you very, very much. Have a great week and looking forward to chatting again next week.
Thank you, Wayne.
Cheerio then. Thanks a lot. That's Peter Allam with today's Legal Eagle slots. And wow, maintenance. You won't get away with not paying it if you find yourself in that situation.